Welcome to Enclave On Air. I'm your host today, Jessica Herger. Enclave On Air is a podcast from Enclave, which provides oncology professionals with the resources and information they need to provide the best patient care. In both digital and print formats, Enclave covers every angle of oncology practice, from new technology to treatment advances to important regulatory decisions. In today's episode, sponsored by Bayer, we had the pleasure of speaking with Benjamin P. Levy, MD, an Associate Professor of Oncology and Clinical Director of Medical Oncology at Johns Hopkins Sidney Kimmel Cancer Center at Sibley Memorial Hospital, to discuss exciting research with targeted therapies for patients with lung cancer who harbor molecular aberrations. In our exclusive interview, Levy discussed recent advances in NTRK, KRAS, and HER2-altered lung cancer. Let's kick it off by setting the stage a little bit. What is the incidence of NTRK fusions in patients with lung cancer?
NTRK fusions are a pretty phenomenal story. This was a fusion that was first discovered in colorectal cancer in the 1980s. We then in the 1990s sort of sorted out what the NTRK physiology truly is under normal conditions. And then we've learned more recently about these fusions and where they exist and the prevalence within certain tumor types. And what I can say that that's important about NTRK fusions and what I teach fellows and community oncologists is that they are really common in uncommon cancers. So we look at very uncommon malignancies like secretory breast carcinoma, mammary analog secretory carcinoma, infantile fibrosarcoma. These are rare tumors. These tumors are highly enriched for NTRK fusions. They occur in anywhere up to 75 to 90% of these rare tumors and are practically pathognomonic. I mean, if you have that, it pretty much solidifies this type of tumor type. But in common cancers, the ones that we see in every day in our adult clinics, like lung cancer, pancreatic cancer, breast cancer, melanoma, the frequency is much less. It's less than 1%. And so these are not common fusions that we're identifying. Our common genetic alterations for patients with common malignancies that we're seeing every day. I think that it's important to note that even though they're uncommon, it's important to test for them. Because if you do find them, we have these new available therapies that we can deliver and elicit meaningful responses. And the best way to detect these NTRK fusions has been with next generation sequencing, and particularly an RNA-based sequencing platform. And that's important. You need to think about how to optimally interrogate these fusions. And the best way to do that is through an RNA-based NGS platform. So, you know, looking at why we test, well, we've got a couple of new therapies that have been solidified based on data and are now FDA approved for NTRK fusion malignancies, and specifically in my space, NTRK fusion lung cancers. And so the first data set that we have is was published back in 2017, a drug called larotrectinib, a really incredible story. This was a study that was tissue agnostic. The tissue could come from anywhere. It could be any type of cancer. As long as they harbored an NTRK fusion, you could go on the study. It was a basket study. So it included, you know, I think, up to 17 unique types of cancers that all had in common that they harbored an NTRK fusion. They enrolled patients as young as 4 months of age. Keep in mind, some of these tumors are very rare and occur in infants, all the way up to mid-70s. And what we saw, there was 55 patients, and if we gave this drug larotrectinib, there were responses north of 70%, a pretty incredible story. These responses, we've had an updated analysis from this trial. These responses are durable and meaningful. And because of that, I think larotrectinib has been solidified as the first FDA-approved drug for NTRK fusion, lung cancer, and for NTRK fusion-positive cancers. The second drug that we have is a drug called entrectinib. We have some less data on entrectinib in terms of numbers, but we know that this drug also developed as an NTRK drug as well as a ROS-directed therapy based on a pooled analysis from a couple of different studies, roughly 55 patients showing a response rate around 50 to 60%. Because of that, entrectinib is also approved for NTRK fusion cancers. I think both larotrectinib and entrectinib, importantly, not only elicit durable responses, but also elicit meaningful activity in the brain. They have the proclivity to cross the blood-brain barrier and elicit responses in the brain. So I hear a lot of arguments, well, they're so uncommon. These fusions are very rare. They're less than 1% of lung cancer. Why test? Well, you know, again, if we find one of these, to be able to offer these types of therapies is really important. And so it really undermines the importance of testing. So I would make the argument that every patient with lung cancer, whether they're adenocarcinoma or never smoking squamous cell patient, should be tested for these fusions. And if found, should be given a therapy like larotrectinib or entrectinib.
Is there any rationale to using larotrectinib versus entrectinib?
I don't think we have, first of all, we have no head-to-head comparisons with larotrectinib versus entrectinib, specifically for entract fusion cancers. These are cross-trial comparisons that we have to make here. Larotrectinib did come first. Larotrectinib does have the most robust data from their patient. I think the patients have now been updated to 155 based on the more recent analysis. The response rates are a little bit higher seen with larotrectinib. Again, with the caveat being these are cross-trial comparisons, I would favor larotrectinib based on just the experience that we've had more patients treated, at least published in trials. That's not to say entrectinib is not a good drug. And certainly the data with entrectinib, they did show meaningful responses, both systemically and intracranially. So also a optimal drug. One thing I will say is that patients who are on larotrectinib who do develop progression probably should not be treated with entrectinib or vice versa. These drugs generally don't work in the resistant setting. There are drugs being developed for resistant entract fusion positive cancers treated with entrectinib or larotrectinib, selatrectinib and repotrectinib, lots of IBs here. Those are two drugs that have been developed that specifically tackle resistance. And we do have at least some data on selatrectinib, and we're going to learn more about the data with repotrectinib. We've got sequencing strategies that are starting to emerge for this very rare genotype, but one that's important and should be tested.
How is the field expanding upon its understanding of resistance mechanisms in this setting?
These drugs, selatrectinib and repotrectinib, and how they work, and they've been developed specifically to tackle resistance. I think we're learning more and more about resistance to these drugs from a molecular standpoint. This has to do with tissue analysis and looking at these resistance mechanisms. We're learning about solvent front mutations that can confer resistance to these drugs. We've learned about gatekeeper mutations that can confer resistance to these drugs. So as we begin to develop these new therapies, I think these therapies are specifically being designed to tackle these mechanisms of resistance. So we can't develop these therapies until we know kind of what these resistant mechanisms are. And so there's a lot of work going into this, as there is in all the genotypes, understanding how resistance occurs and why to develop that next therapy.
KRAS was really thought to be an undruggable target, but now that we've seen significant activity with novel drugs in this space, what is sort of the story with KRAS in lung cancer?
KRAS mutations, one of the first mutations that we uncovered in lung cancer. We knew this was relevant in roughly 25% of all lung adenocarcinoma. It was thought historically to be undruggable. It was thought historically to confer worse overall survival or confer poor outcome to chemotherapy. And, you know, for a lot of different reasons that are rooted in real biology, it's a tough mutation to drug. This has to do with the binding pocket of the intracellular domain and how it's locked into a certain state so that you can't bind the drug to the intracellular domain of the tyrosine kinase. But we've made headway, and I think what we've learned about KRAS is that KRAS mutations can be subtyped. There are different subtypes of KRAS mutations, and that's important. KRAS G12C is the most frequent mutation. And the unique part biologically about KRAS G12C, it does create a druggable pocket that allows some of the new drugs to kind of fit into that pocket and shut the constitutive activation off. And KRAS G12C, thankfully, is the most common KRAS mutation. And if you look at the prevalence of KRAS G12C in all of lung adenocarcinoma, it's around 12 to 13%. So this is a big chunk of lung adenocarcinoma that we are dealing with. We know how to interrogate KRAS G12C. It's an easy one. It's not a fusion. It's easily identified on most contemporary next-generation sequencing platforms. And because of the properties that I mentioned before, the these drugs have started to be developed. The first one that has been on everyone's radar for at least the last 12 to 24 months has been sotorasib. It's a small molecule inhibitor that selectively and irreversibly targets KRAS G12C. We have a couple of pieces of data. Given the timing, I can only share with you one piece of data that was been published in the New England Journal of Medicine. The phase one experience with this drug was evaluating about 130 patients, of which 60 of these patients had lung cancer. Remember, KRAS G12C can also occur in other tumor types. And it's an oral therapy. And what we saw from the data was a response rate of around 30 to 35% and a progression-free survival of around 6 months. So this drug, while KRAS G12C is an unmet need, and we really need to develop good drugs, when we look at this drug as a targeted therapy, it really doesn't do as well as other targeted therapies like EGFR targeted therapies or ALK-directed therapies. Nevertheless, this is sort of the first signal we've seen that you can actually target KRAS, specifically KRAS G12C. So, you know, some of these responses were durable, and the drug is relatively safe. It certainly is, the safety profile is compatible with what we've seen with some of these other small molecule inhibitors. So very encouraging. Now we will have an update from the phase two CodeBreaK trial presented at World Lung, which I don't have the results of yet. So stay tuned, but I would encourage everyone to look that up. At the time of the release of this, we'll probably know kind of larger data sets, you know, where we are with this drug. It did receive in December 2020 breakthrough designated therapy by the FDA, and we'll see how things go with this drug. The other drug is adagrasib, again, a small molecule inhibitor of KRAS G12C. Smaller data sets with adagrasib. Again, we'll have some updates from adagrasib at World Lung in Singapore. But we have seen, again, once again, meaningful responses in smaller data sets. And, you know, the responses, I think so far, 17 to 25 patients have been reported on. Again, we're going to have more data on this, but we are seeing responses in the 30 to 50% range. Again, tough to know. I would like to see the larger data set on adagrasib to see what this drug does, and we'll have some more meaningful insights into this in the next few days from World Lung. Both drugs, again, well-tolerated, and we will see where these agents head. Now, a couple things I want to say about adagrasib and sotorasib is whether they will work as single agents is unknown. And perhaps the future of these KRAS-directed therapies will be in combination with either immunotherapy or chemotherapy or drugs like SHP2 inhibitors. I think we are starting to scratch the surface in understanding that maybe the most meaningful responses will not be with single agent drug, which is kind of counter to our whole targeted therapy paradigm, and which we usually just give one drug. We identify a mutation and we have a genotype directed therapy, our targeted therapy. Usually it's just one drug and we get response rates north of 70%. We get PFS ranges anywhere from 19 to 36 months. And we're just not seeing that with these two agents. So the goal, I think, will be to understand how to combine these drugs with other agents to create more meaningful and durable responses for our patients. Nevertheless, very exciting, and also once again underscoring the importance of testing. We have some of these drugs in clinical trials. What's interesting is some of our patients have been alive for so long and are now getting these drugs that we have to go back and look to see what type of KRAS mutation they had, because it didn't make a difference a year and a half ago, and now it does. So I would encourage everyone, if they have patients that were tested before, look back at that molecular testing to see what they had, because we often forget what type of KRAS they had. If they have a KRAS G12C, they may be eligible for clinical trials involving these new targeted therapies.
What other targets have emerged in lung cancer that look particularly promising? And how do you foresee the role of targeted therapy evolving in the coming years?
We'll have a lot of data at World Lung. I think the CodeBreaK data is very interesting. The sotorasib story will be very interesting. I think one of the other mutations that's gaining a lot of traction in lung cancer has been HER2 mutations. These mutations occur in roughly 1 to 2% of all lung cancer. perhaps a little bit more, usually found in never smokers. And we just have not been successfully been able to drug HER2 mutations in the past with some of the earlier therapies that we've used. We've used a lot of tyrosine kinase inhibitors. We've used drugs like Herceptin, a drug very popular in breast cancer. And we really haven't made a lot of headway. That all changed, I think, in the past 6 to 12 months with a new drug called trastuzumab deruxtecan. This is a new class of drug, an antibody drug conjugate that targets, or at least theoretically targets, protein receptors on the cell that are HER2 proteins. The data that we have, it comes from the DESTINY-Lung1 study. I think we'll learn more about some of the nuances of this study at World Lung. But the data that was presented at ASCO on the 42 patients that were HER2 mutated, and specifically getting single agent trastuzumab deruxtecan, again, this antibody drug conjugate. And what we saw was pretty impressive, a response of north of 60% and a PFS of around 13 months. So pretty remarkable data here that we've not really seen with a drug. And I think this is put front and center again, HER2 mutations and how to best drug them. It is also put front and center antibody drug conjugates. These are drugs that the lung cancer community is just starting to wrestle with. We has an approval already in breast cancer. But antibody drug conjugates, these drugs that have an antibody with a linker and that linker is attached to a chemotherapy payload, these are not the class of drugs that we have routinely used in lung cancer, but we're now starting to see real meaningful activity, and the DESTINY-Lung1 trial is case in point using a drug like trastuzumab deruxtecan. There are other antibody drug conjugates that are going to be reviewed at World Lung, and I would ask everyone to keep these on their radar. There's several classes of them right now. Certainly HER2 antibody drug conjugates. There are TROP2 antibody drug conjugates. There are HER3 antibody drug conjugates. A new class, I think they will get some sort of traction in our clinics, meaning they'll get approval within the next 12 months. So I would ask everyone to keep your eyes out for that, because it's a very exciting time to be in this field. Yes, we have targeted therapies. Yes, we have immunotherapy. Yes, we have tolerable chemotherapy. Now we've got this new class of drugs, antibody drug conjugates, which may be more selective, may be better tolerated, although they do have some toxicities. And I think the big challenge will be, how do we sequence all these therapies? You know, we've got all these new types of therapies. What is the optimal sequence? I tell my lung cancer patients now, I'm playing the long game. I used to play the short game 10 years ago. We're playing a long game. It's a marathon. And we have to figure out optimal ways to sequence all these great therapies to improve our patients' lives in terms of quality of life, but also meaningful improvement in terms of survival. So lengthening survival, and dare I say, cure some of our stage 4 patients that historically have not been able to be cured.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to this episode of OncLive on Air, sponsored by Bayer. Check back on Mondays and Thursdays for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field and recaps from our State of the Science summits and institutional perspectives in cancer webinars. For more updates on oncology, be sure to visit www.onclive.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. OncLive is also on social media. On Twitter, follow us at OncLive and at OncLiveSOSS. On Facebook, like us at OncLive and OncLive State of the Science Summit, and follow our OncLive page on LinkedIn. If you liked today's episode of OncLive on Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts or Spotify so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you are there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to OncLive on Air. Editor's note: this podcast was recorded prior to the International Association for the Study of Lung Cancer 2020 World Conference on Lung Cancer.